We've got to talk about the Unity debacle, and while we're at it, why don't we also talk about owning your tools, JS Game Dev Summit, Pixel Washer, and game music.
You're listening to Make the Game with Matt Hackett.
Unity. I probably don't need to tell you that it's one of the most popular game engines out there, especially among mobile game devs and indies like me. Unity, I have a lot to say about it. I feel like it kind of messed up my old indie company, Lost Decade Games. We were working on a sequel to A Wizard's Lizard, which is on Steam and was made in JavaScript and had, you know, performance issues and other complaints. And we started to pivot for the sequel over to Unity. Everybody was using it. Everybody was like confused why we weren't using it. And so we had to try it out. So we started prototyping the sequel in Unity. It was going really well. I remember not wanting to learn it. You know, it felt like not just a new language I had to learn, which was C Sharp at the time, I believe, but also like all the engine specific stuff and, you know, somebody else's user interface. And I resisted it. I didn't know how to use Unity. I wasn't really helping Jeff with the engineering side of things. I really leaned into the art side. And I feel like the art for the unreleased AWL sequel was really good. But that project eventually did, it was just taking too long, so we pivoted right back to JavaScript for the unfinished sequel. But like the point being that, you know, if we had just continued with JavaScript and not been distracted by Unity, it would have been better off for us. Now, it's not really Unity's fault, but it is, like, it's a distraction, right? It's like, hey, look at this new shiny everyone's using, right? I feel like it's good because I've come out of that the other side being less attracted to the shiny and more like, what's in front of me? What's working right now? What do I have at my fingertips, right? Eventually, I came around to Unity. I really like it now. I was using TypeScript at my day job for many years, and, you know, I wanted to keep up with industry standards. Like, I would talk to AAA devs, and there's just this, you know, they don't take me that seriously sometimes when I'm like, oh, I use JavaScript or oh, I use TypeScript. They're like, ugh, that's not pro. That's not official. Like, you couldn't come work at my studio or something. You know, like, they wouldn't say these things, but you can kind of get that feeling, you know? So I wanted to know about it. It was irresistible, right? And it was different from what I was doing day to day at the job. I really like the editor. I love that you can edit the editor. It's very meta. You can add your own scripts to execute from the menu bar. It's super cool. I tried to, as much as possible, do things the Unity way, except I really wasn't using a bunch of asset packs and bundles and the asset store. I was doing it all by hand as much as I could, but trying to do things the Unity way, like use game objects, use C# and all that. I love the flow. The editor's super good. I like knowing you can release everywhere. That felt cool. Like, it felt very official. You know, every project I would make on Unity, just knowing that it could make it to consoles and it could easily be on mobile, easily be on desktop, that felt great. I don't really feel that way all the time when I'm working in JavaScript. I know that, you know, mobile performance might be a problem and certain consoles might just be a non-starter. I don't really know. That was comforting about Unity. There's things I don't like about it as well. I don't like the editor has to refresh. I would kind of, as I was working, I would play this kind of metagame with myself where I would begin in the code editor, right? I would change some code and I would quickly tab to Unity and then tab right back because that would trigger Unity's, oh, I need to refresh some files. And it takes, you know, anywhere from 1 to 10 seconds, depending on what you're doing. You know, it'd slow you down. So I'd kind of have to play that metagame with myself. And I don't really care for that. Reloading or changing things in Unity made it behave really badly. Like if I wanted to move stuff around inside of a tile map or rename sprites, it would sometimes just kind of panic and it'd show like gray squares for sprites. I really hated that I couldn't just change stuff. It felt like the data, you know, I would have a file. It's supposed to just be data, right? But instead of it being simple and me just changing that, it would kind of like, I don't even know how to put it. It was like things would just break. And so I would develop this habit where instead of changing things, I would just create brand new stuff, like a brand new tile map and just delete the old one. Things like that were kind of a headache in Unity, where in other tech stacks, it's pure data driven. You know, like that's the way it is in my JavaScript ECS right now. Or if I change the data, everything just works. There's no like extra metadata. There's nothing else for the editor to kind of trip on or not understand. I also don't love that Unity has like a million ways to do stuff. You know, I mean, that's always true in programming, usually, is like at least a handful of ways to get a task done, but using the Unity editor sometimes felt like, this won't make sense to everybody, but you ever been to the Cheesecake Factory? If you're not familiar, it's like this giant, huge restaurant chain, at least in the States, and they have this ridiculously large menu, and it's overwhelming. They have like every cuisine type. Like, what are you gonna get? Spaghetti or tacos or cheesecake? And that's sort of how Unity felt sometimes, was here's this gigantic menu, pick one. And then I would get decision paralysis often. So I started learning Unity part-time somewhere around 2019. I feel like I have a lot of domain knowledge, especially in 2D. I've built lots of prototypes. I have lots of good, usable code. I have a healthy workshop. And on top of all of that, of course, I have my main project, Witchmore. I've thought about changing the art style. I've thought about not doing a Survivors game. With my code base now being up in the air, man, this project, it's in limbo. Which makes me glad I've got the beautiful simplicity of Pixel Washer. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But okay, that sets the stage for me and my relationship with Unity. And I know a lot of developers out there have even more commitment to it, like over a decade now of knowledge and workshop and all that. So Unity has kind of been great from the beginning for most people, I think. But then some stuff started to happen, as it does over time. First back in 2014, I guess, John Riccitiello, probably mispronounced that, formerly of Electronic Arts, took the reins as Unity CEO in 2014. But the real concerns began when Unity merged with a company called IronSource last year in 2022. IronSource is known as an ad tech company focusing on marketing, and apparently we've heard some shady dealings. I don't know. So us Unity devs have kind of been on orange alert since that merge happened. And then earlier this week, they dropped a bombshell. I won't get into too many details because you can look them up and there's a gigantic spreadsheet to look at to see how they're going to charge you. And they're changing often at this point, so there's almost no reason to get into the specifics too much. But here are the main concerns. One, they're charging per install, which has two main problems. One, Unity tracks the installs, making this a black box, where Unity can really charge developers whatever they want. And the definition of install is vague here, which is dangerous for business. Two, you can't charge by install, because that's not how us developers make money. A platform needs to succeed as its customers succeed, obviously. Earning 5% of all revenue or something for a platform is okay, because it means if I make a bunch of money, you make some too. But with this install crap, you might have a situation where your game makes some money, but not 20 cents per user. And let's say a big YouTuber picks up your game one day, suddenly, you might get a huge bill. That could bankrupt you. That's dangerous. That's predatory. Two, changing the terms of service. So Unity has a transparency GitHub, I guess, where it mentions something about, yes, you can buy an old license for, Unity 2020 or whatever, and there you go. You can use that in perpetuity. You're paid off. But they're changing their terms, pulling the rug out from under us. That's not cool. And they only gave companies 4 months of warning? Ridiculous. Three, this is a breach of trust. Okay, even if they roll this back, they've shown that they are Darth Vader. I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further. Like, can we trust them now? I don't know. I would call committing to Unity a risky business vector at this point. And this is in a world where we've never had more free open source options. I would struggle to choose Unity again for future projects, and I'm going to have to make some hard decisions and figure out what to do with my main project, built in Unity, Witchmore. Which brings us to owning your own tools. So if you build your project on something like Godot, you're probably fine. And you want to check the licenses for all these kinds of things because every game engine has a different license. But some of them are very permissive where, you can go get the code, you own it. No one can, they can't even take it back from you, right? That's the kind of license that you want. Obviously building your own tools is a great way to go too. I build my own vanilla JavaScript ECS. Nobody can take it away. Nobody can say I owe them money for it. But I found a lot of times there's just not a good open source solution, right? Like I used to use the GIMP as a Photoshop replacement and, not for me. These days I use Clip Studio Paint, which is now on a subscription payment plan, which I don't love, but it's not too expensive. And what's cool about it is you can export to PSD. So, owning your own tools, I don't own Clip Studio Paint, they could take it away from me, but at least it's not like a proprietary format, right? Like they do have their own clip format, but I can export to PSD so I can still like talk to friends and stuff. Or if Clip Studio Paint was gonna change their terms in such a way that I was like, ugh, this is gross, I gotta get out of here, I could still export to PSD, which is supported by obviously Photoshop and then also apps like Procreate. So I have lots of options because of that. Whereas, you know, in Unity, you can't just say send to Godot. There are tools that will help merge that for you, which I'm sure are, you know, imperfect and being worked on. And to be fair, Clip Studio Paint export as PSD is not perfect. Sometimes some of the data is lost, or, you know, maybe CSP doesn't do something that Photoshop does, or vice versa. But on the topic of owning your own tools, I think that's an important piece of the puzzle, is in the cases where you can't find a free open source tool to use, at least find something that's compatible with other applications. We'll talk a little bit about owning your own music too in a bit. But for now, let's talk about JS Game Dev Summit, because I just this morning wrapped a Twitter Spaces talk or chat or a Spaces. I wrapped a Spaces. It was called Experience of Creating JavaScript Games. The organizer called it kind of a JS Game Dev Summit preheat, which I liked. That was super fun, and if I can find a recording, I think it also went to YouTube or something, then I'll put a link someplace. I will also be emceeing the first day of JS Game Dev Summit this year on the main track. I believe that's also when my talk is debuting, How to Make a Web Game All by Yourself. JS Game Dev Summit is September 28 and 29, 2023. That's this year. This will be my first MC. That's Microphone Champion. Yeah. My first talk, which is surprising. And I'm really excited about it. So come check it out if you are available. In the experience of creating JavaScript games this morning, I made sure to work in there some Pixel Washer. Pixel Washer is a chill game about washing pixels. That's it, just pixels. You can play the web demo right now on itch.io. Go for it, do it. So Pixel Washer is interesting to me because I'm having such an easier time talking about it than I ever have with Witchmore, right? Pixel Washer is a 2D overhead action game. You control Pixel, the cute little piggy, and you are tasked with washing dirty pixels with a satisfying power washing pixel gun. That's it. Super satisfying, super simple. Nice. So I talked previously about the Steam plus Kickstarter combo. Steam was obviously part of my initial plan, but Kickstarter wasn't. However, I've been talking with my friend Ben Anderson, better known as Heartbeast, and his plan was to kickstart his new game, Wassard, along with his Steam page. So we talked about kind of doing this together and collaborating to help each other's projects succeed. I had not planned on doing a Kickstarter because this is an area where I had a previous failure with a sequel to A Wizard's Lizard. But being involved with somebody awesome like Ben, who's got multiple successful crowdfunding projects under his belt, that felt like the obvious decision. Like, why not? So I spun up a Kickstarter page and began to lightly promote it. Then later Ben hit me up. He was kind of thinking about skipping the Kickstarter. The thought was, it's a lot of work. We're already spread pretty thin making these games that already need really good Steam pages too, and a Kickstarter was kind of a distraction. I think neither of us felt like we'd be able to fund the entire game. Like, honestly, I'd need, I don't even know, 50 to 100K, which I cannot guarantee I can get on Kickstarter for sure. On a previous podcast, I talked about how I kind of have to give a discount on my time to fund the game, which is weird, right? I was going to shoot for 5 to 10K, which would fund a portion of the game. So neither of us really needs the whole game funded, so it wasn't really about the money. It was to validate the project. And I think we've both kind of gotten enough positive signals about our projects that we feel like we can move forward without vetting it through Kickstarter. I think also talking to our wives helped, like we both did. Ben thought his wife wanted him to do the Kickstarter, but she didn't. My wife Andrea was surprised. I wanted to get back into that lion's den, and I didn't. I feel comfortable talking about all this in the public because Ben already did a podcast about this. Check out Heart Game Dev Podcast, episode 32, teaser trailer, YouTube comments, and wishlist numbers. So obviously I could have continued with the Kickstarter, but without the kind of combined effort of Ben and us making our two projects better together, I decided to skip it. I kind of wanted to anyway, if I'm being honest. The downside is I only lost really a few days of effort, mostly working on the video, which I spent some time iterating on, and I think it's quite good. Also, some of you gave me feedback on the page. I really appreciate it. Sorry I'm not doing the Kickstarter, but your feedback is still helpful and will improve how I approach other stuff. I mean, I learned a lot, you know, even just making the page and the video and stuff. I got a lot better at the Pixel Washer voice. Washing pixels. And I can cannibalize some of the ideas in the video for YouTube or something. So it's not a big loss. I'm kind of relieved. Money soon would have been good. It would, you know, I could have had money on the table within a month or two. That'd be great. But the thing is, like, I said this and my wife agreed this should be the case. That if the Kickstarter failed, I should stop working on the project. And it would be so hard for me to stop right now. I have so much momentum. I'm almost glad it's not even a possibility of me not being able to work on it anymore. Because I'm making great progress on Pixel Washer. I just uploaded a devlog earlier this week, Finding the Lost Pixels. Really surprising. I don't understand YouTube at all. I thought it was a really good video. I've actually lost subscribers over that, and it's one of my least watched videos. I have no idea what I'm doing. So I'm trying trying to double down on the game itself. I'm currently developing a promotional development plan, which is something I picked up from a talk by Thomas Resenegger of Future Friends. They have a game marketing podcast. Check it out. In the near future for Pixel Washer, I'm improving the user interface, the washing game feel, and adding lots of new content, especially geared for Halloween. Right now, you can play the latest web demo on itch. Please do add Pixel Washer to your Steam wash list, and you can get both those links via pixelwasher.com. Now let's talk a little bit about game music. I just want to give a shout out to Joshua Morse. I'm not sure if Joshua listens to the podcast, so maybe he'll hear these words, maybe he won't, I don't know. We've been friends for a long time. I consider myself so lucky. He's a cool guy, and I'm a genuine fan, a legit fan. I listen to Joshua's music more than almost any other artist, except for my very favorite bands, like on Spotify, my listener stats. Like I listen to like Depeche Mode, Radiohead, Joshua Morse, right up there. And for years, Joshua did the music for all my games, beginning with Onslaught Arena, and of course, A Wizard's Lizard. But then we have had this happen twice now, like at Lost Decade Games, we were working on a turn-based strategy game called Burn Tactics. Joshua made the whole soundtrack. It's awesome. The battle music, some of my favorite music ever. It's so good. And we didn't launch that, and I feel terrible about that. And then the A Wizard's Lizard sequel also failed to launch. Joshua again did the whole soundtrack. So I could not ask for music for my games coming up. Plus, I had like hundreds of music files in my folders that I had acquired over the years. So like, I didn't want to waste Joshua's time, you know? Joshua was always working on amazing remixes and stuff, and I'm like, awesome. I almost feel like I'd be taken away from that. I used to feel like I had to make all my own art. I used to feel like Joshua had to make all my music. And to an extent, I even sort of felt like Jeff Blair had to be involved on the engineering side, you know, for me to make games. That's how I did it for years and years, and that's how I learned so much and made some of my best games. Still to this day, I go to Jeff for really advanced questions, and he's always helpful. My two games on Steam have Jeff Blair code in them, and they're packed full of Joshua Morse music. Witchmore and Pixel Washer are going to be new in that regard to me. Which takes me back to owning your own tools. Since I'm using licensable music, is something like a Pixel Washer OST out of the question? Original soundtrack? Like if I wanted to put that on YouTube or Spotify to kind of, you know, help promote the game? The answer is I don't know. I would need to check the license for each individual song before I could include it. And some of them are very permissive. Like some are public domain and they're like, look, it's yours. Do whatever you want with it. And in that case, yes. I mean, you could even say, I made it. And you could lightly change it somehow, you know? That's just what's allowed. You shouldn't do that. But it would mean that I could make an original soundtrack without, you know, breaking any laws or anything. And the creators would be happy too, because they are the ones that gave that license. And obviously I would credit everybody, but I think that's an interesting thing is, you know, do you own your sound effects? I think it's important to check your license. If you made them yourself, obviously you can do whatever you want. But the vast majority of sounds that I use, you know, they're owned by other people, but I have purchased them or otherwise acquired them, and now they're licensable to me. What's interesting is that, for example, in my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself on Amazon right now, $14.99, I have a page in there where I have indie game sim promotional art to kind of show you what sort of banners you might want to have, like the various, how different the shapes can be, right? And obviously I made those so I can do whatever I want with them. But I was thinking, you know, I could change that to Pixel Washer, but I would need to make sure to check the licenses because I drew the pixel washing gun, I drew the glasses on the piggy, but I did not draw the piggy, and I would also be showing some sprite work in the background. I made the logo myself. So it's just interesting, right? There's some portions where I own my own tools because I made them, and other parts where I have to like check the license. But I think the good news is that, you know, I get these assets from people who make assets for Humble and Itch. They're not going to be changing the terms of service on me, like some companies. I'm not going to suddenly owe 20 cents every time I show a pig in a game. So I'm really big on using pre-made assets these days, which is new for me. It is really helping me move faster, but you got to be extra aware of what you can do with your tools. That's it. Good luck out there, devs. Rough times. Now it's time for you to go make the game.